Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations. This is episode 4, and we read two books, Organizations by Simon and Marge and The Behavioral Theory of the Firm by Syed and Marge, focusing on organizational routines. This episode is brought to you by the Innovation, Knowledge and Organizational Networks Research Center at the University of Warwick. While this is episode 4 of the podcast, it is first in a number of different ways. This is the first installment of the Carnegie Mellon School series, and to learn more about that and what it means and why we decided to introduce this kind of format, please refer to the announcement from 2 weeks ago. This is also the first episode when we have a guest, so it's all very exciting and novel. To learn about the readings and for more information about the topic, please listen to Supplement for episode 4, as well as refer to the episode page on our website, www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please get in touch with us on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, or via our website. We are always happy to hear from our listeners. My name is Dimitris, coming to you from Birmingham in the United Kingdom.
This is Pedro, coming to you from Recife in the northeast coast of Brazil.
This is Miranda, coming to you from Warwick Business School in Coventry.
This is Ralph, coming to you from the Hampton Roads area in Southeast Virginia, United States.
This is Katerina, coming to you from Warwick University in the UK.
Welcome, everybody. So, first things first, it's only polite to introduce our guest. Katerina, do you want to say a few words about who you are and why you're here with us today?
Yes, I'm very honored to be the first guest of this podcast. And the reason why I'm here is, I guess, because I'm currently a visiting fellow at the University of Warwick. And I finished my PhD last year at the University of Zurich. And during my PhD, I focused on studying organizational routines. And I have to admit, I really developed a passion for organizational routines. And the more I study them, the more I get excited about the topic. So I guess that's a good thing. I got the fellowship to go abroad. So I also went to visit Martha Feldman, which is currently one of the key scholars in the area of organizational routines. So I had the opportunity to get her insights on the topic as well. So I'm very much looking forward to the discussion, and I enjoyed the reading a lot because it took me back to the origins of routines.
That's great. You met Martha Feldman.
Actually, I've known her for 3 or 4 years now. So we had continuous discussions about routines, and she's amazing because she continues to be interested in the topic and continues to develop her understanding of routines. So she's very open of further developing it and revising it, etc. So that she's a very interesting person.
Well, that's great. Maybe we'll be lucky enough to have her listen to this episode as well.
I would definitely suggest it to her.
Oh, that's nice. Well, we are very happy to have you join us today, so thank you. Now, for the benefit of our listeners, I think it might be worth summarizing what it is that this episode is about. And we read two works from the Carnegie Mellon School, Organizations by Marge and Simon, and A Behavioral Theory of the Firm by Marge and Syed. The reason we chose these is because they represent pretty significant cornerstones in organizational theory and management. And unlike previous texts we've discussed, which reflect the work experience of authors such as Taylor and Fayol, or present a more essay-like structure as was the case in the previous episode on Maslow, here we have fully-blown academic works based on proper research and scientific assumptions. In particular, these works by Marge, Simon, and Syed seem to be strongly connected and affected by the formal view of knowledge production, as is the one that's found in economics. The works present a series of formal logical statements and mathematical models, and while reading, you feel as if you're traveling through a description of a system given by numbers of assumptions, propositions, and formulas. One of the main goals of the Carnegie Mellon School authors was to reform the views on organizations stemming from economic theory. They insisted on the relevance of matching models to empirical reality and frameworks which truly reflect the ways in which human behavior and internal processes in organizations unfold. In this sense, the concept of bounded rationality, for instance, and the limits of human cognition are one of the main contributions in that direction. And for this episode, we concentrated on the sections of works dealing with performance programs and standard operating procedures, because these are taken as conceptualizations, which is close to what we contemporarily refer to as routines, or, well, organizational routines, which is the focus of our discussion today. Routines, I think, and we'll talk about this more, but I think in this context they can be understood as predetermined or standardized sets of actions that are activated by specific external stimuli. They're essential for organizations as mechanisms to deal with complexity, since human cognition is limited and organizations need regularity in their functioning. Although today this view of routine has changed, and I'm sure Katerina will tell us more, they're still an important part of organization theory and arguably the building block that ensures that organizations accomplish specific purposes in complex environments. So, what did we think of the readings?
One of the things that occurred to me, I'm probably more passionate about organizational routines than I thought I was now that I've read them. I read a little bit more about them. So I joined Katerina in being extra passionate about it because I kept thinking about organizations I've been involved in and how they make decisions and processing routines. And it strikes me as a very rich area of organizational behavior and theory to go into. So I thought they were very interesting. And I have many things I want to bring up later about them.
I was also excited with the reading, but I was also a bit surprised. Because I think I was expecting to learn more directly about routines from them. But I think what I got, and that's very interesting as well, was more how routines fit the general picture of how organizations function, why are they relevant in the first place.
If I can add to the previous points, I was also quite fascinated by the idea of rationality and the cognitive limits on rationality. So this view of what a human being is within the organization, especially how it challenges other concepts on organization theory. So that was one of my key takeaways, let's put it that way.
I think it's very interesting that you all seem to have liked the literature on routines. That sort of sets me out a little bit, because whilst I did enjoy the readings, I personally have some issues with the concept as such, and particularly its utility. But those things aside, when reading especially the behavioral theory of the firm, I think it's important to keep in mind what was it that the Carnegie Mellon scholars were responding to in writing this. And particularly, it was very useful for me to think of, as Katerina mentioned in the supplement and in the beginning of the antecedents of the behavioral theory of the firm, they write about what it was like theorizing about organizations at that time. And apparently the theory of the firm basically relied on assumptions that firms are profit maximizing entities and that they operate with assumptions of perfect knowledge and things like problems of control, standard operating procedures, budget. This is on page 8, they weren't really on the radar. So this was clearly brought into the picture through these works. So that I liked. But other than that, I'm very excited to be convinced, I suppose, through listening and talking to you today.
So we have a devil's advocate today.
A reluctant one, possibly.
Okay. I also just want to build on that very quickly, that I really was fascinated by, I think, the courage and the strong things that they brought against traditional economics theorizing, which was, until that point, I think, prevalent. But at the same time, I think, I was expecting a bit more, because they say about the importance of connecting models to empirical findings and things like that. But as I read the book, I felt that it was a bit dry at certain points. And it was still very model-like in the way it was structured, and it still almost points to ideal situations. So at the same time, I appreciate the effort, as you were saying, Dimitris, but I still was a tiny bit disappointed that they are still very much inside the typical, not say the typical, but they're still inside economics paradigm in a way.
Yeah, I just quickly want to respond to Pedro, because here I think it's good to think about the context in which these works were written. And I saw basically two things. On the one hand, they bring in kind of their own experience in organizations when they refer to, for example, what Dimitris mentioned, standard, they observed actual standard operating procedures and the use of plans and their importance in organizations. And at the same time, they were trying to do this modeling and simulation and writing propositions. And I think this has to be understood in the context that they were trying to build a scientific theory of the firm. And so at that time, scientific meant that you had to do simulations and modeling. And so I think that's the reason why they did it. I think if they would have been worked today, where you have different understandings of what science means, then it would have been different.
Okay, so almost you have to play by the rules in order to challenge the game.
Yeah, in a way. I think, I mean, they wanted to talk to the economists and come say, hey, firms actually operate differently than what you are assuming.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, in the economics field, their work hasn't been picked up, which is also quite interesting. Even though they tried to talk to the economist.
It was a bit odd to open this reading and find clearly spelled out the assumptions and presuppositions that they're operating upon, as well as the numerical orderings of priority of different statements. Yeah. Not to mention that I think in the behavioral theory of the firm, they mathematically spell out what a firm is, essentially. It was a little bit like reading logical positivist works from early 20th century, really.
That's true. Although, I would add, just a tiny, I think that was the other thing that I really liked, is that we can really see that there is a lot of multidisciplinarity inbuilt in the work. You know, they are really trying to use psychology and sociology, all the good things I would add. I felt very comfortable with the right mix of things. It seems almost like a renaissance kind of style.
Well, almost a mosaic, right, Pedro, where they're looking at these kind of different aspects or bringing these different fields of knowledge. I thought that was an interesting approach, although I will say, Dimitri, you're not as far out from the group as you might think. I also found myself thinking skeptically about the utility of some of these ideas. Not that it's not of any value, it's just some of the lengths they took it, I thought, were a bit far. But okay, like Katarina said, they were trying to come up with a scientific model of and theory of the firm. So I think I also understand what they were trying to do, even if I don't necessarily agree with that, how useful it is what they produce.
And also, for me, what struck me when I read this again, I've read it at the beginning of my PhD so long time ago, was how comprehensive the theory is they were trying to build. I mean, nowadays, we write papers which look at slices, little aspects of organizations, and they try to build a theory of the entire firm. And so, I mean, naturally, the reading and the ideas, they're very dense. All these different aspects that they bring in, I was pretty fascinated.
I just want to build very quickly on that, because that refers to what I was saying before, in which I was fascinated by the fact that I started to understand more about how routines fit the overall functioning of organizations, not so much maybe about routines in itself. And I think that comes from exactly this thing that you're mentioning, that they have this comprehensive theory. And then I could see why routines are so important, why they are the building block to make organizations happen, because they're the ways that you control for unpredictable things. They are, at least it seems to me, you know, they're this kind of package solutions to deal with a multitude of different scenarios that firms develop through time. So see, oh, okay, so now I see why routines are such an important theme in organizational theory.
Well, and I think, Pedro, the other thing that's interesting about their look at routines is they're trying to, I don't think they really said this explicitly in the books, but I did see it in one of the other articles we read, where they're trying to open up the black box of organizations and try to understand how they function. So they were, I thought that was interesting. They looked at the economic, you know, sort of assumptions that the theory had used up to that time. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's important to see where they fit in the spectrum of organizational theory and management theory. And they were trying to get into the details of how things are done and the influences and how the environment influences internal and external. And I thought that was, it was interesting to see, oh, there's these other factors and they try to bring in these different pieces and stuff without actually trying to set up an equation for it, which would have left me kind of cold. So I do think it was, like Katarina said, it was a very ambitious undertaking.
It's also quite fascinating how the starting point is a pure economic background, and then you get closer to an idea of routines which relates more to our everyday life. So I really like this transition from something very, very, very abstract in forms of equations to something that I can see. And I can see that the work developing towards that even further. So it is a shame that it didn't get closer to this side of the discussion, but I did appreciate the shift in it. Let's put it that way.
So should we perhaps say what is meant in these works by organizational routines as a matter of definition?
Who
wants to say that? Katarina?
Well, I mean, you guys can take a start and then let's see. Because, I mean, I'm interested to see what you got from the readings.
Okay. Well, in my head, actually, I was going through them. And I think every time I saw something that could resemble like routines, I think I copy and pasted somewhere. But then at the end, I had like this long list of things. And I was like, okay, how... this seems too much. But I think at the core, it seems to have this idea. One of them, I think Simon and March call it, you know, like programs, performance programs, on the behavior theory firm called Turned Operating Procedures, or the other way around. I can't remember now. But essentially, I think they try to hint that routines are specific ways to handle stimuli, different things that come up, all that might need to be done in a way in organizations. And they are these kind of standardized ways to do things, to order how things are to be dealt with. So they are a repertoire of already learned solutions to deal with all the things that might need to be done in organizations, if that makes any sense.
I think it does. And the only thing I would add to your excellent overview there is that in the March and Simon book, they talk about a performance program as being a response to some stimulus. And the other piece I would add is this idea that it comes from working on problems, you know, problems that the organization has faced, and the need to come up with some kind of a standardized way because it helps produce stability. So I thought that was very interesting.
In a way, I felt that, you know, routines in this context is almost like the big instructions manual for organizations. Not necessarily written down, because they say that they might exist also in the way people are trained and learn. But if you have to, you know, create the instructions manual for how an organization operates, that's the routine that you go look for.
That's so interesting. This is so different from what I got. To an extent, of course, I agree with your characterization of routines. Mine's a little bit more critical, I suppose. But this is where my first issue comes in, is to what extent is it meaningful to speak of organizational routines in a sweeping way? I read routines as less manual and more habit that is somehow learned into the organizational ether and then sort of used in response to these particular situations over and over again. And that to me is fraught with a number of different problems, and not least of them being, of course, how can we say that routines apply to the entire organization that is anything larger than a handful of people.
So do I understand you correctly? You criticize that the way they conceptualize routine sounds very much like habit.
Or I don't understand why their organizational routines. I mean, I understand why their organizational routines in a syntactic way, but I don't really understand why they would assign basically organizations. They're not a thing, right? So how is it that routines that I suppose are analogous to habits, you can correct me if I'm wrong, how is it that they can apply to the entire multitude, the entire heterogeneity of the organization all at once?
I think you have to, the way organizational routines are different from habits is, at least the way they try to do this in the behavioral theory of the firm, saying that, well, an organization deals with very complex tasks and they have to break them down because you cannot deal with them in their complexity. So they break them down in individual tasks, and then you can develop a certain way of doing this task. But the problem is it has to be coordinated with all the other tasks that are done in the organization. And that's also why they talk about these performance programs being pre-planned and pre-specified, because they need to provide an output that is coordinated with everything else that is done in the organization.
So is it then routines of organizations, or is it routines within an organization, whatever that may arbitrarily be?
Oh, I think they see it more as routines within an organization.
Right, because that's not the impression I got from the text.
Ah, okay.
I still don't fully understand your problem, Dimitri.
I don't have a problem.
No, I mean, what you're criticizing, what it doesn't really seem to convince you.
Well, I was just puzzled that, as Katharina just said, routines are standardized responses to complex issues. Yeah. And my experience has been that there is no such thing, at least not on the scale of the entire organization. It may be so for certain teams or certain clusters of individuals, but I would not go as far as to call that organizational routines, which is why I asked whether it's routines of the organization or whether it's routines within the organization, which is a completely different matter.
Yeah, that's the last part, because I see routines, at least I saw routines everywhere when I was doing the research. I don't see it necessarily to be so coherent and so overarching as they talk about in the tech, you know, so well programmed and always performed a certain way. But, you know, the way things are standardized, who is responsible for what is considered to be acceptable response for certain situations, and all these things, not only because they're written down, but because they have been learned, they have been, you know, people speak of right ways of doing things. So it seems to inhabit very well the way things happen in an organization, to me at least.
Right. Well, have you observed any conflict or power struggles in that organization? Yes.
That's where I think that's exactly where the whole thing starts to break down. Because my problem with the text is that they assume there is like an equilibrium, a perfect situation, an optimum to be reached, according to which routines should, how things should take place. And of course, when you go into an organization, you see that it's not necessarily like that. People don't structure organizations according to, you know, these ideas. Many things happen in reality.
Can I just add something, because it's related maybe to the points that you've raised, but I've just formulated it in a different way. The problem that I had, or my concern, or something that I wanted to raise with everyone, is the relationship with routines and the idea of role, in the sense that routines to me on an everyday language basis gives me the idea of something related to specific micro tasks, while sometimes in the text I have this feeling that what we are talking about is actually something a bit more encompassing, so something related more to what I would call role. And that kind of picks up on what you said, Pedro, of the idea of responsibilities and even power dynamics. So I was wondering what you think the relationship between the two concepts is, if they are overlapping, if one is within the other.
They talk about roles, but then they don't talk about how roles and performance programs relate. I would argue roles can be part of a routine, but they can also be that within one role can be involved in different routines. So it can be different ways in which role and routine overlap or work together. But I would see them as different things. So, for example, Martha always uses the hiring routine, so we use the hiring routine, okay? So there's a department in an organization, the head of a department in an organization wants to hire somebody. So the head of the department is the role, and the routine is the hiring routine. So he's not the only one that's involved in the hiring routine, because he also has to talk to the HR people who do the advertisement. He has to get approval from his CEO to hire a new person. So there are other people involved in the routine. And then from the other perspective, hiring is not the only thing that he's doing. He's also managing his people. He's distributing work, etc. Does that clarify it?
Yeah, I think so. Okay, well, that's great. But basically, how is then this process of hiring different from just activity? Like routines, they're supposed to be symptomatic of organizational regularity. And from what I understood, there's a path dependence, meaning that they lead to a certain outcome based on particular decisions done in the past, which is when they're learned. Basically, why is hiring as a routine different from hiring when it was done first? What's the routinized aspect of this activity?
So I can tell you, like Pedro was saying, there's many, for example, the how you make a salary offer, coordinating with the director of HR, what questions you're allowed to ask the applicant, what flexibility you have with offering salary. Many firms have those things built into routines about that circumscribe somewhat the behavior or the agency of the head of the department. So they've got lots of, and in fact, if it gets really complicated in the government, you have to have somebody as an advisor to help you with all this, because the routine is very complicated. And then what's the process if the person you want to hire, you give them an offer and they give you a counter offer? What's the process you use to execute that? Can the head of department say yes by himself, or does she, he or she have to get acquiescence from somebody else? So there's lots of the details that you would specify routines.
I think what Ralph overall is hitting at is that there is a number of rules that are inscribed in artifacts, in the person that has to be involved, and the general behavior on what's accepted or not. So that's one of the differences.
Okay, but how is this then conceptually different from, for instance, what we had an episode 2 with Fail with the scalar chain?
What you mean?
Well, going to different people to ask for permission isn't what I perceived as the routines here in these texts. It's just organizational hierarchy.
Well, that's actually a good point, because I was surprised in somewhere, I have to find it now, but I remember that, I think it's Simon March, they say something about organization structure, and they say something like, organization structure consists simply of those aspects of the pattern of behavior in the organization that they are relatively stable and that change only slowly.
Do you have a page number for that?
Page 170. And in that moment, it seems, you know, I was like, okay, so are routines structure?
I think, yes, in their theory, they would say routines are structures and organizational structures and can be lower, kind of lower order routines, I think they call them, which can be adapted then by higher order routines. So they are routines for learning as well. So how, like, if you get feedback, how do you adapt a performance program, etc. So they can be more, there are some routines that are more stable than others. I think that's what they say. But overall, the routines are structures.
Actually, that was another point I was not expecting to find in the text. It was a good, interesting discovery, is that it seems that not only the performance programs or the standard operating procedures per se can be seen as routines, but there is a routine to construct or change them You know, so they're both of the things that are supposed to happen. And there is also a structure for how to change them.
Oh, definitely. Yes, I've definitely seen that in many organizations.
That was made me think in the instruction manual in the first place, because it was, I was thinking, okay, they're not only what is supposed to happen, but what is supposed to happen if it doesn't happen, if it has to be changed. You know, there's almost like two levels on this thing.
Yeah, and I think in addition to that, behavioral theory of the firm brings in another aspect or another way of a routine, which is the rules or heuristics for decision making. So they also talk about how there are simple rules that help to make decisions, which is, if you think about it, different from if you talk about a routine as a performance of a task, which specifies the exact steps that you have to take. So they use the routine, I think, in different ways, or the concept of routine in different ways. But it all boils down to that the routines simplify the world in which the organization operates, because their underlying assumption is human cognition is limited, it's bounded, and the world is hugely complex. So we need ways of reducing that complexity. And there are simple rules for decision making that help you reduce that complexity. There are performance programs that help you reduce the complexity of how to do a task, etc., etc. I think that's the common denominator in all these different ways of understanding routines.
Yeah, I get that. But I think another curiosity, and I would like you to maybe get any response to that, is that as I was reading that, I was thinking, okay, so at what point in time did people start to talk about routines explicitly so, and to put in that box what these authors refer to performance programs or standard operating procedures? Because they don't really use the term routine so much there. Jim March is still alive, so I was wondering, you know, what would he have to say about that? When does all this become routine in the literature, and is it okay to put that in that box?
Oh, that's actually a good question. That's true, because they don't use the word routine. I think Nelson and Winter, in their 1982 book, they start using the label of routine. But the way they talk about routine is very much the way Sired and March and March and Simon talk about performance programs and standard operating procedures.
And then after that became routines.
Yes, yeah.
So if we had to use a metaphor for routines, organizational routines, then would it be closer to, and probably it wouldn't, but still, to routines as computer program routines, that something is run as a script? Or would it be routines as just reflective action, I suppose, habits?
I think script computer program comes close. I can't remember where, but I do believe they talk a bit about this sort of algorithms or process and processing. So I think your first suggestion is close to the meaning that they assign.
Yeah, I think all these people, you know, I don't know so much about that school, but they all related to the cybernetics and all these closed loops and systems and everything, you know, creating these, you know, very tight boxes to understand how things function, social aspects of things. So I think they totally fit the whole idea of computer programming and logic. The whole propositions and the models they construct could almost be read as a series of logical statements.
Well, right, in fact, then on page 2 of the, I guess it's this, is it this March and Simon book? The Sired Simon book. They talk about, we want models that could predict actual decisions if provided with the necessary data. So there you go, Pedro, talking about the data input, not simply models that could predict some qualitative properties of those decisions. So, Dimitri, I'm with you when I read a sentence like that and I just say, you got to be kidding me. Organizations are way too complicated for that. And, you know, when you go back to the bounded rationality and people's imperfect understanding of the world, that's a bit of a stretch. So I was a little concerned about the utility of that as well. So that's why I tend to agree with you with your concern about that, how it could be used that way. I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, as we say, and say there's no value to it. I just think, when I read something like that, I just think, oh my gosh, that's pretty ambitious.
Well, no, I'm granting their assumptions that individuals are boundedly rational and organizations are rational systems, because if we don't subscribe to these assumptions, then there isn't much point discussing this work. It just doesn't make any sense. I'm just still trying to understand the relationship between routines as these cybernetic scripts, apparently, and collectives that are organizations. That I still didn't get to, and perhaps this is the biggest thing that I'm kind of trying to understand today. Is at which point can we meaningfully say that some kind of an externalized, and externalized where is one thing, script can be applied to real living, breathing individuals that in both texts seem to be given a sort of ideological priority, because one of the responses that these works bring is that people are not integers in an equation as it was before these works.
I agree with you, Dmitry. I share your concern that I think you get to a point where, yes, I agree that there's bounded rationality, but there's so much variability among people and on goals and agendas and the filters people use that it gets very difficult.
So do you think that one of the major issues is that the work tries to talk to too many people, too many scholars from different backgrounds, tries to communicate with too many different fields?
I think they build very much on their own experience in organizations, but they're trying to use a lot of concepts and ideas from very different fields to put it all into one model.
I was thinking about that as well, because I was curious, you know, to this multidisciplinarity, you know, that we in no way, I think, saw nowadays for a number of reasons. So about this multidisciplinarity, which I think is very interesting. On my part, as a sociologist, I see that what they're using from traditional sociology seems very well fitting in a way. The thing, though, what seems interesting to me is that for some reason, it seems that the human is almost like their measure for everything, you know, because it seems a lot of what they're claiming is that we need to reground our understandings in the very limits that humans have, especially in the case, of course, of the human rationality, what humans are able to grasp. To understand that, of course, you have to understand a bit of psychology, a bit of sociology, and so on and so forth. And it seems to me that although they come from a range of disciplines, they have one measure that seems to be stable, which are the humans.
To add to that, even more specifically, I think what they're concerned with is human cognition. Because, I mean, essentially, I think they even say it in the behavioral theory of the firm.
Oh, yes.
The theory of decision making.
Yep.
And of human cognition.
Yes.
And the reason, yes, why you all feel that you don't really understand what they mean by routine is because they don't look into the action. They say, okay, the action of organizations, what actions people actually take, it's just routine. It's just they're executing these performance programs and that's it. And that's unproblematic for them. That just happens the way it's pre-planned and pre-subscribed. What's problematic for them is the human mm-hmm. cognition, how you make decisions, how you make choices, how you choose from a specific situation, which performance program you execute, etc., etc.
I'm so glad you said that, because I was just about to go there as you began in regards to cognition, and I'm glad you cleared it up, because you're right. If we look at people as not necessarily embodied creatures, but as cognitions in the organization, which I feel obliged to add that they're not. But if we do that, then many of these problems, especially the problems that I seem to be having with this, do go away. But why on earth would you, unless you're Descartes, assume that humans are cognitions?
I want to respond to that, but before I want to say that I almost had no this impression at first, and that's what the literature on these books talk about. But as I was reading, there were some moments in which I saw that they acknowledge some kind of, not necessarily action, but they acknowledge that what is written down for us is not how things go on. They talk about discretion. Specifically, I think they say on page 143, the relation of written operating procedures to the actual program that's carried out is a complex, for the program may have been written down, etc., etc., etc. So I was a bit surprised that they seem to acknowledge that there is a little gap between what they're talking about and how things play out, actually. Or maybe I'm being too nice.
No, I mean, of course there's going to be a problem in translating what is basically a cognition pilot of a human body performing actions in patterns with other human bodies that are piloted by cognitions to make it into mm-hmm. an organizational regularity. This is hugely complicated, especially you're going to write it out mm-hmm. in the logical terminology.
Well, I think that's where there's a challenge, because I don't think it's that simple, like you said, right? Why would you model, as it were, humans as just cognition? There's lots more to it, and I'm not going to defend them because I don't know enough about it, but you could see that, well, maybe they're simplifying it to make it more tractable, but for a social scientist like myself, that's where things start to get less interesting, because when you start simplifying away that complexity of humans and motivations and what they're learning and where their attention is and what they're concerned about, I think your theory becomes very dry and disconnected from what really goes on.
I think this is rooted in their, and Katharina might help clarify, this is rooted in their understanding of learning primarily, because learning is the cornerstone of establishment of routines mm-hmm. by any measure that routines come to be, because certain responses are learned. And at one point they mentioned that routines are transferable. And first that struck me as hugely puzzling, because, you know, how? How can you fully transfer something from one part to the other? It makes more sense now. If you think of routines as performed by cognitions, then externalizing these cognitions into the form of rules for one, or standard operating procedures or whatever, would of course make them transferable anywhere. And they mentioned, I think, in the organizations that in cases of mergers and acquisitions, you can actually, an acquiring company can benefit from internalizing routines of who they acquired. Which, is that so? I think it's there anyway. But it makes much more sense now, now that you said that thing about emphasis on cognition. Whilst I still don't agree, but this is a different matter, not necessarily relevant to the readings, it is more clear now, so yay.
I think that the focus on cognition, again, has to be understood in the context in which they were writing this, right? They wanted to go against the economists who were assuming perfect rationality, and that the way firms operate is that they know all about the alternatives that they have, about the future, how the future is going to unfold, what consequences certain decisions will have, etc., etc. And they were saying, wait, 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 it's not that simple. Human cognition is limited. So how do firms actually operate if we don't know what consequences different alternatives have, if we cannot take into account all the information that might be necessary to make a decision, etc.? I think that's where their emphasis on human cognition comes from.
I agree. Basically, they're saying that organizational actors are not omniscient, as was assumed by the rational classical economics theory.
I was just going to say, I find it interesting they were writing this in the 50s, right? 1958. And you still hear economists acting like, you know, it's a new discovery that humans aren't perfectly rational actors. And so I don't be too critical of economics.
It's, okay, but, it's a safe place.
Because that's not the purpose of the podcast. But okay. But I find it fascinating that they were talking about these ideas in the 50s. And we're still acting like it's some sort of new discovery that humans aren't these, you know, purely rational economic decision makers. So I thought that was refreshing to read that and say, wow, these guys really had this nailed early on. One point I want to bring up, I wanted to ask Dimitri about this, because you were talking about this, about sort of agency and acting. And I was just wondering if you were puzzled by this the way I was. So they go to human cognition and they say, you have to look at real people and how they make decisions and what information they use. And then they take some of that information and then sort of generalize to what looked to me like generalizing to organizations broadly, or, you know, organizational behavior broadly. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I just was a little uncomfortable with saying, okay, well, here's what the individuals are doing, and now here's how they operate collectively. And I thought that was kind of a big jump intellectually. And maybe just because we only read sections of the book, I didn't see how they built to it. But that left me feeling uneasy.
Well, I resolved that just recently through understanding more of what they considered learning to be. It seems that there is a super individual, meaning basically organizational, almost metacognition, where the learning is happening. So if an organization learns through agents, individuals, then this knowledge becomes embedded within this super individual entity. And I think this is how they translate routines from a localized level where they are acquired, which inevitably I think has to occur, to a larger scale collective level, such as the organization, or even another organization that may have acquired this first organization. So I profoundly disagree with that, also based on my own research, but of course this isn't a problem with the text, especially at the time that it was written. But this is how I have come to understand that sort of inconsistency, I guess.
I can understand, Dimitri, what you said. I do notice some skepticism in your tone of voice about this super individual, you know, entity. And so I share that. And I also, what I also wonder a bit about is, okay, well, they don't really explain the mechanism, right? So I get it that they say, okay, many heads are better than one, and you have this sort of collective learning going on. I just found myself disappointed that they didn't go into more detail about how that works and just said, well, it happens, and here's what the outcomes are. So that, I just felt that was lacking.
Well, they didn't go into more detail because you can't explain that, because it's not real. Organization, even as a kind of cognition, is an abstraction.
Right. That's what I found bothersome, is that they had all these great descriptions of the roles and behaviors, and then they just assume that you can fall into that next level. And so, for different reasons, but I think we got to the same place where we're skeptical of that.
I also share this whole skepticism towards the view that they have on learning, especially in the way that seems to be too connected with adaptation. So it seems it reads almost like in an evolutionary term. As things come up, an organization must learn and deal with them, and it automatically becomes part of what the organization knows. But my other point was on this whole thing that Dimitris was saying about mergers and acquisitions and the routines, because I would like to hear from Katerina on that, because if I understand correctly, nowadays in the routines literature, there is almost like a split. There is a one that's looking routine more as a process and how things happen. Marta Feldman is one of them. And there is the dynamic capability people, which take the routine as a black box, as exactly this thing that Dimitri was hitting at. So maybe I think Katerina could clarify something on that note for us.
Yeah, definitely. So there's one strand of literature, you don't need to call it dynamic capability, but certainly capability and organizational capability, okay, which consists of routines, mm-hmm, and they are primarily interested in how the routine as a black box contributes to firm performance. So that's their main concern. They look at how certain bundles of routines create better firm performance than others. Mm-hmm. And the other literature, which Martha Feldman and Brian Pentland built, essentially looks into the black box of the routine and looks at the internal dynamics of routine. So essentially what you don't see in these classic works, because they just say, well, there's a performance program and that's it. That's what Martha opens up and says, well, look inside and see there's a lot of work going on in order to make this happen. It's not automatic and mindless as they make it seem in these books.
That's all for part one of episode 4. Please visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com for information on part 2, future episodes, and show notes. If you enjoyed the first part of this episode, please leave us a positive review on iTunes, subscribe to our feed, and tell your friends about this podcast. Even a brief review goes a long way to helping new listeners find us. You can also get in touch with us on our website, on Twitter, Facebook, and on LinkedIn. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you next week as we conclude our discussion of organizational routines from this very first installment of the Carnegie Mellon School series.